cliffcentral.com. I'm very happy to have in the studio someone we got hold of last year, Toni Becker. She has suffered from anorexia. That's not the most interesting thing about her, but that's what we're going to talk about here this morning. How are you, Toni?
Good, and you, Garrett?
Yeah, just sit forward for me a little bit.
Oh, okay,
microphones are not going to come to you. Bring Muhammad to the mountain. You know how it goes. How are you?
I'm good, and yourself?
There's some pretty cool tats on your arm.
Thank you. I think the last time you saw me, I didn't have any.
Yeah, that looks amazing.
Thank you so much. Buster Bolton. Guys, that's, I'll just plug that.
Yeah. That's beautiful. You got like a woman and then a whole lot of patterning. There's some roses and...
My love potion.
And there's an Indian sort of... it looks almost like those henna things that they do some of the time.
Exactly. Yeah, quite a romantic.
All right, we got to take a picture of that and put it online. How are you? What's
I'm
been
good.
Happening?
A lot of change in my life.
Yeah, Happy New Year, by the way.
Thank you. You too.
Mm.
Last year I decided to make a huge change in my life. I was... very miserable. I hear you guys were talking about that earlier. And I was miserable for 16 years. And
why were you miserable for 16 years? Who would go through that for 16 years? Did you know you were miserable?
Oh, I loved it. I reckon I was self-indulgent. I thought it made me interesting.
Uh-huh.
And in a way, I became addicted to it and the chaos.
And did you get attention for being miserable?
Absolutely. Until it stopped. And until I realized exactly why I was doing it. I think... it started in high school.
All right.
And the school I went to, you wanted to stand out in some way.
What school? Is it like an art school or one of those?
It's a private religious school.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, there we go. You got
already
it.
Like, oh,
ding, ding, ding.
Yep.
Wonder why we got psychological problems.
No,
I'm kidding. That, a
Let's
lot of people go to
school.
Those.
Yeah.
No, a lot of schools like that produce excellent, happy people who are balanced, but then occasionally they also produce people who are miserable.
Let's just say the school I went to, we had a fashion show every year in Standard 8, and they cancelled my year because people were sick to lose weight.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So is this
bad.
Where it started?
It started, look, okay, when I was 9 years old, also in a private religious school. I think I was just a very sensitive child.
Uh-huh.
And someone would tell me, oh, your hair's curly, it's gross, you should straighten it. And I started straightening my hair at 9 years old. And I shaved the side because the piece wouldn't go straight.
Oh, my God.
And I started stealing my mom's makeup at 9 years old because someone told me I had a red nose. So I started putting that on. And I think that's where it started.
Now, I mean, I've always thought that there's this funny balance between kids being honest with each other and having to deal with adversity when you're a kid.
Yeah.
You know, everybody thinks they're ugly. Everybody thinks they're unpopular. Everybody thinks they're less than cool. Everyone when they're a kid.
Yeah.
There's always someone in the school who's more popular than you, and chances are they feel worse than you do. You just don't know it.
Yeah, exactly.
But then there's real bullying, and one offside comment from somebody can set you off on a life of self-loathing.
Yeah.
Especially if they catch you at the right moment where you're weak, where maybe things are going on at home that don't help, where you've had bad news.
That's exactly what happened, Gareth.
So was it those comments? Was it about your red nose and about your hair not being straight? And
it's, also, I think I had stuff at home. My dad was in a really serious accident, and he was in a coma for 3 weeks, you know, and we didn't know if he was going to... I mean, this was when I was... I think I was 10 at the time. And there was a person I was friends with. Look, I'm not blaming her for any of this, but she would constantly tell me I was less than.
That bitch.
That damn bitch. I don't hold her resentment at all.
It's fine. Just give me her ID number, girl.
When did you kill her? When did you kill her and bury her in the Karoo?
Yeah.
She's in my basement.
Okay, stop right there.
Skin suit.
All right. No, so let's just give this some serious attention for a second, because I think for a lot of young people, and even it can happen later on in life, there are various catalysts that then eventually drive you to the point where you go over the edge and you start to have a very unrealistic expectation of what your body and your face and the rest of you can look like, and you start to harm yourself.
Yes.
That's where it becomes major, because then you're not only doing the very physical and real damage to yourself, but you're also harming people around you. You're living in an unhealthy, not particularly salubrious environment, and all you do all day is damage and destruction.
Yes. Look, I think that all started in high school.
Yeah.
I was told I was weird and different, and I took it on. Like, guys, I was told I was weird because I listened to System of a Down. Like, that's how hectic my school was. So weird. So I wanted to stand out in some way or separate myself from everyone. They told me I was weird. I went to school. I was like, okay, I'll show you weird. Mm-hmm. And then I became the goth kid. From then, I needed something that was mine and something that would get me attention. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie about that. It started with attention. Oh, mm-hmm. I want to be beautiful. I want these girls to be jealous of me. Mm-hmm. They couldn't give a shit.
Yeah.
But it's all on me. And I started starving myself and doing whatever it took to lose weight, from pills to bulimia. I was bulimic in high school as well.
Doesn't your body rebel against that? Doesn't your body just, you get so hungry? Like, I've tried to starve myself. I mean, just from the point of view, like, I don't need to eat horrible food. It's hard. It's really tough. You have to be a pretty disciplined human being to get anorexia and bulimia going, right?
I think it's just the self-loathing that becomes your discipline. Yeah. And it is hard. It was hard in the beginning, but your body does get used to starving. I could say I forgot what it felt like to be hungry for a long time. It was like you get used
don't
to
you
feeling
lack weak. Energy?
Completely. Completely.
So you're a bit of a zombie, right?
I was a zombie for... I looked like a zombie. I was a zombie. It was... Yeah.
Do you also not get addicted to the control that you find that you have over time, where you think, oh my gosh, I've gone 30 days without eating. Let's see how much more I can push it. And then you start becoming addicted to that self-discipline and control.
The control is a big part of it.
What
you feel
do you,
powerful.
Now, what do you allow yourself to have? You're starving yourself, but do you drink water? I mean, what are you allowed? What kind of crazy rules do you make in your own head?
So it's all pertinent to the person. Some people will just have apples. I loved Frizzuccinos.
Oh.
I would have Frizzuccinos all the time. I would get 3 a day.
No sugar in them, though.
No, there's loads of sugar in them.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah.
So that's kind of how you'd sustain this very unhealthy...
Yeah, that
body.
Was the
it's
energy.
That's you'd provide enough, just enough energy to make it through the day.
Exactly, yeah.
Were you sleeping properly?
I slept all the time, but then...
Because you were exhausted.
I was finished. Hmm. It was hard. It was hard to climb up a flight of stairs. Only last year, I was able to walk up a flight of stairs healthy without, like, stopping to breathe. But then also, I found drugs.
Yeah.
And that took away the obsession with eating, because I would lose weight anyway. Mm-hmm. And the control, like you were saying earlier, and the obsession became about the drugs. And then once I put down the drugs, the eating disorder came back. Because then again, I've lost control over something. I need control.
But you just breezed past putting down the drugs. That's not so easy.
No, that was...
So how did you get out of that?
So I ended up going to 3 rehabs. Jeez. And the last one I went to was Houghton House. And I went in for, I thought I was going in for 3 weeks, and I ended up being there for 8 weeks.
Wow.
I went into kidney failure.
Jesus. From the drugs or from the punishment your body had taken from not eating as well?
Both. It was definitely from both. Obviously, the drugs played a major role, but also during drug addiction, I stopped eating.
Did they identify both problems, or did they think it was just a drug thing? How long did it take them to catch on that you'd also been anorexic?
Probably about a day.
Oh.
It was pretty obvious.
I mean, you're thin. You are thin. You're even thin now.
Yeah.
You're a healthy thin, but, you know, I can only imagine what you must have looked like and felt like when you went in.
It was horrible. I think I was about 35 kilograms.
Gee.
At that point, yeah.
That's barely your bones.
35 kilograms.
I mean, your hair weighs 35 kilograms.
And my hair fell out.
Ay, ay, ay.
This is new hair, guys.
So what are the horrible things that happen to people when you're anorexic? I mean, when your hair falls out, apparently bad, bad breath.
Yeah, and hair grows on the back of your neck.
What?
A little bit on your back. Yeah, it's like to keep you warm, it's little hairs.
Look at Gareth's face. You're not like a werewolf.
You become like a Sasquatch.
Sasquatch. An anorexic Sasquatch.
I didn't know that. What else happens to you?
Well, it's the weakness. It's pains. It's back pains. It's to go to sleep, you feel your, for example, I used to struggle with my hip bones.
Because they're cutting into everything because they're so sharp, because there's no muscle and fat around them.
Yeah, that was painful. That was really uncomfortable.
Did you look great, though?
I thought I did. I really genuinely, I really thought I looked like semi-okay. I still thought I looked fat.
So when you looked in the mirror, you'd think you were fat even though you were 35 kilograms?
Yes. And there were certain places I would focus on. My thighs were a big thing and my arms. Now, looking back that I'm recovered, I look at those photos and I can see it now. I never used to be able to see it.
And how would you handle the constant comments from people saying, you look XYZ? What did that do to you?
It's such a complicated thing. This is a big thing that I wanted to bring up, is when you're struggling with anorexia, comments are, can be, it's such a illness, such a mental illness, that anything can be taken the wrong way. So someone says to me, you look thin. Yes, great. I love that. But am I thin enough? Why aren't you telling me I look sick? Why aren't you telling me you're worried about me? When I start to gain weight and someone says, oh my God, you're looking healthier, that was the biggest insult. And getting past being told those things and actually taking them now as a compliment was the most difficult thing for me to overcome. It's little things like that. On Sunday, someone said to me, wow, Tony, you're really looking healthy. And for the first time in my life, I took it as a compliment and didn't cry over that comment. That's how obsessive it is.
Yeah, you're living in a different world when you have this body dysmorphia stuff, huh?
It's your world. It's only about you. It's self-obsession.
And every word can be twisted to mean what you want it to mean.
Exactly. Anything.
Gee, it's hard when you're in that situation, though, to also not be completely self-absorbed.
You are self-absorbed. I mean, the amount of times I would look in a mirror, think this person looked at me this way. Why didn't this person tell me?
How do you get on with your normal life? Were you able to do normal stuff during all of this?
Well, I focused a lot on work.
Uh-huh.
And I threw
Were you
myself
competent
into
at
that.
Work?
Not when I was on drugs. After the drugs,
yeah,
I would say I threw myself completely into work. And I worked super hard because it was a distraction from eating. Because I kept myself busy, so I would do well in the workplace. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I know some people who just, they're eating the whole time. I don't know how they get any work done. I'm hiring anorexics, you know.
We get the job done.
That's a tagline, but
No hate mail for that, Gareth.
When you have to beat things like this, when you have to get through it, I mean, this rehab, I'm sure there's a lot that you can cover there, but is there an aha moment? Is there a huge amount of work you have to do on yourself? Is it people you talk to? Is it the material you read? Is it experience? Is it pain? Like, how do you break through?
I can tell you the moment that everything changed for me with the anorexia, it was, look, drug addiction, you have support groups, you can work through therapy. But with the eating disorder, it's completely on you. No one else can help you except you. And what happened to me was, it's going to sound really small, but I met a guy who was super cool, not in a romantic way, just a friend. And he asked me if I had cancer. My hair was falling out and I was really, really thin. And that shocked me. And he was blatant. He saw a photo of me from my matric dance. And he nearly started crying. So I was like, what's wrong? He's like, you look like a different person. You look like you're dying. You were beautiful. You looked lovely. And it's like looking at a corpse now. And that shifted my perspective, because I've never had a stranger almost be that real with me. And little things kept happening after that. And then a big thing.
Just hold on a second, because I'm confused. Some people would say that anorexics need to be handled with kid gloves. You need to be very careful what you say to them, because anything can trigger worse behavior.
Yeah.
And they can keep going down that path. So it's almost like you only want therapists and trained people talking to someone with this kind of, because it's a mental condition.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And then what you're telling me is that some dude off the street who was honest and real with you, who told you the truth without really, I mean, he was being considerate, because clearly he cared about you. And he demonstrated that. But he's the one who helped you make the breakthrough?
Yes. And I can tell you, I've been to about 10 therapists, and they knew why I was there. They knew I had an eating disorder and I could manipulate. Not because I knew what they wanted me to say, and I knew what I anticipated what they were going to say. This is a complete stranger who genuinely thought I was sick. He had no idea about an eating disorder. And for some reason, it shifted something. I can't say why. I can't say it works for everyone. But it genuinely changed my outlook on a lot of things. And also, I was in a relationship that ended because of my eating disorder.
So this is not... This was not society. I mean, when you hear about these kind of these people who talk about fat shaming and a body positive, that doesn't have any effect on your mental condition as an individual.
Not at all.
So if everyone in society just suddenly said, oh, we love every kind of person, no matter what shape and size, that's not going to make any difference in your life, is it?
Not at all. I don't even share those posts.
Yeah.
To be honest. Sorry, guys.
No, that's what we want, is the honesty. Yeah. I'm trying to understand this condition. It's very difficult to get my head around it because I've never experienced it, and a lot of it has to do with experience, and each experience is different.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I think a lot of people still grapple with understanding mental disorders.
Yeah.
And in an attempt to understand them, we like to rank them. So we feel sorrier for, say, maybe an alcoholic and a drug addict. And then we rank them in order of what we think is believable and important. So what is the general belief by people when it comes to eating disorders? Are they sympathetic to it? Do they mostly think, no, man, it's self-inflicted?
Yeah.
What is the general perception around eating disorders as a mental illness?
It's frustrating. People get frustrated by them. They think, oh, she's just vain and she's self-obsessed. You are self-obsessed. I was self-obsessed, but it wasn't in a positive way. It wasn't me thinking I was magnificent.
And there's not what Mubs is saying is true too. There's not a huge degree of sympathy.
Yeah, there really isn't.
Like if you meet a drug addict, you like shame. It's not their fault. They're enslaved to the substance. If you meet someone who's got depression, you're like, well, that's chemical. It's in their brain. There's nothing they can do about it. So you have to be understanding. But somehow, when it comes to eating, because it's you putting things, they think, oh, well, you could just stop doing that.
Exactly. It's like when someone says to someone with depression, "Oh, just get out of bed and smile." You know, people say things like, just eat it. What's wrong with you? Oh, just shut up, Tony. You know, stuff like that, which I get and I understand, because if you don't suffer with the illness, I can see what it looks like from an outsider perspective. It's just a vain girl or guy who wants to look good all the time.
And there are guys, by the way, who have this problem too, right?
Oh, it's a very common and serious problem, and it is getting worse.
Is it like alcohol addiction or any of those things where they never say I've recovered? You used the word recovered just now, which made me think of it. Are you always recovering? Are you worried you could slip back into this at any given time?
Oh, with anorexia? Yeah. Definitely. It scares me every day, but I can say now for the first time, I don't want to rely on it anymore, and I've given up relying on it. And that's what I think. I don't want to say I'm recovered. I do want to say I'm in recovery, and it's a just for today thing. I'm just thinking about that. You're right. I don't want to say I'm recovered. I'm recovering, and I'm recovering every day.
Yeah, because it's not something that you defeated and you put it in the box and move on. You know, it's in your head.
Exactly.
And it's not going to go away. It's a demon that's going to keep working at you unless you fight it back every day. So exactly. If that's the case, are you able to have now that you've made so much progress, because you clearly have, are you able to have a normal relationship with food? Are you able to have normal relationships with people? Are you feeling more physically and mentally and emotionally vital and connected?
Yeah. In terms of food, there's certain things I never ate for 15 years, 16 years. So say pizza. I've managed to have two slices of pizza. That sounds like a really...
Oh, you martyr.
Really hectic thing, but it's that was a big thing for me, and I'm getting okay with that. I can't say that I would eat a whole pizza now, but I'll help you.
I'll have the other half.
We'll all help.
Yeah, sure.
Let's do it.
You talk me into that.
I think I'll always have a difficult kind of relationship with food. There are fear foods that I am forcing myself to get over, like the pizza. Like a burger. I'm eating meat again. Things like that.
I've got a special surprise for you. We weren't going to tell you about this, but I have a special prize here. They've given me a voucher for $7 KFC for you when you leave the studio this morning. Are you excited?
I'm so amped. So excited. I'm going to go right now. Eat the whole thing at work.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give it to my colleagues, I promise.
Relationships?
Relationships, everything's changed in terms of that. First of all, just in terms of family, I'm closer to everyone in my family. I think...
Do they understand what you've gone through now?
They really understand it. Also, another thing that changed was my father was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer that has spread.
Mm.
And stuff has been really hard in that regard. And me and him had a open, honest conversation about everything. And the first thing he said to me when he was diagnosed was, please don't use this as an excuse to go back.
Mm.
And I really will never do that. He's my best friend. My mom's my best friend. We've all grown closer now that I am in recovery. Mm. In terms of friendship, I have the best friends in the world and they understand. When I decided to recover, I actually sent a message to all of them to say specific things I don't want them to say to me during the time and everything.
Because they have to be a part of that
kind
of safe zone that you're in while you're getting better.
Exactly. And in terms of my love life, I've got a boyfriend now and I've never been happier. And
he's also happier because you don't have a hairy back anymore.
Yeah.
Thrilled. That's what I heard from
him. He's so excited.
He just WhatsApped us and said, yeah, she's way better now. But he has to understand these things, right? So you have to bring people in. And this is not about being self-absorbed. This is about being honest.
Yeah.
You have to let people know how your story has evolved and where you're at so that they can, first of all, understand.
Yeah.
And second of all, so that they don't treat you differently.
Exactly. And also, if I do go back, they can pick it up.
Mm.
It's a difficult thing to bring up with people, especially in a relationship like that. It's really hard. Some people will run.
I'd probably run.
Damn.
Now, I have to tell you, it's very difficult to understand if you're not in it. You've already said as much. But,
yeah.
But I think we've all got to just be aware of how many people are silently suffering.
Yeah. And sometimes you can't see it.
No, you can't. And also, there's this bias towards thin in society. So if you see someone who's thin, and I'm not sort of speaking of skeletal, deathly thin, you think, wow, lucky her.
Yeah.
You imagine she can't have any problems. She's got her weight under control. She obviously knows how much she's allowed, portion sizes, calories, blah, blah, blah. What you don't realize is she may have these dark demons.
Yeah. And it's hard to talk about. It really is.
Society has no problem telling someone who's overweight to lose the weight.
Yeah.
But we seem to have very few issues around telling thin people they should put on a little bit.
Yeah.
And of course, doing that is exactly the opposite of what should be said to it.
Exactly. It's very complicated.
Well, I'm glad you could talk about this now. Have you thought about kind of making it a thing that you do? Especially at schools?
I would like to do something. I just have to be very careful because I know going to a school, it's very easy to say something that triggers people who do have the potential to suffer from this disease. I don't want to tell them what I did and the stuff I did because they can use it as, oh, I just learned a trick.
Wow. That's so sick. That's so sick, right?
Think about this, like with addiction, you have NA, you have groups, you can sit in a group and help each other. With an eating disorder, you can't have an eating, in my opinion, you can't have an eating disorder group.
They'll all steal each other's ideas and get worse together.
And they won't say it. It'll be a silent competition.
God.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so it's a very difficult, that's why it's such a difficult disease to beat. It's very difficult to go into an institution, which I have done, for specifically an eating disorder. Because there's a group of girls and guys who kind of don't want to be bigger than each other. Everyone wants to be the smallest one there.
It's very, very hard to figure out. But I'm glad we've made some progress today. And thank you for coming to share your story.
It's my pleasure.
And I appreciate the fact that you're so open and honest about it. Because it's not always comfortable to talk about, right?
Oh, it's very difficult.
Especially to strangers.
I was petrified to come in.
Nah, well, I hope you don't feel too bad now.
Nah, it's all good.
Yeah. By the way, you're looking fat.
Gareth, you know what?
I'm kidding. Dad, no. Come on. What are you talking about? Come on.
Just for today. Just for today. That's...
And if you want to share some of those tips.
No. I'll write you a letter just now.
No.
No, Tony, in all seriousness, thank you. What you're doing here is heroic, because there may be someone who is going through the same thing or at some stage of that story as yours. And they might be able to hear something in this that, that has a positive trigger rather than a negative one.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
And well done, hey? I mean, this is not some patronizing thing that I say to people who've overcome great adversity. It's something that many of us never get to.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Well done.
Awesome.
Well, nice to hear your story. And, I mean, it's not a pleasant story. And I'm glad that you recognize that there is still work ahead.
Yes, yes.
And you never really beat these things.
Exactly.
All right. Hopefully we'll see you again soon and you'll have more interesting tales to tell us and hopefully some experiences that will add to the ability for ordinary people like you and me to get through.
Awesome. I'd love to do that, guys.
Yeah, and if you do get out there and start helping other young people, let us know about that too. We'd like to help you.
Okay, rad. Cool. Thank you so much, everyone.
No worries. Thanks.
Have an awesome day.
Tony Becker, everybody.
Cheers, guys.
Hell of a story. Sure. That's amazing. Cliffcentral.com.